It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast, our preview of the Temple Owls taking on our East Carolina Pirates. With us right now is Kyle from LaGrange Barber. How are you, man?
What's going on, dude? Been in
the
bar
for a big blackout on Thursday night. And Bubba Rosenbaum, how are you?
Doing well. I hope you guys have had an excellent Monday.
We have, getting ready for the big game on Thursday night, ESPN, 8 o'clock, and looking forward to a big crowd at Dowdy Pickle. Let's make it Rowdy Dowdy. Let's give that nickname, like, that it really means something again. Rowdy Dowdy, Kyle.
I prefer Ticklin.
All right, dude. Well, whatever you want to use, whatever nickname, but I like Rowdy Dowdy. We're going to do it. Let's have about at least, I would say, 40,000. I'm hoping we can get at least that amount. And the most important thing is for people to be loud into the game. That's the most important part.
Dude, it's going to be a good atmosphere. I don't know what kind of crowd we're going to show up on a Thursday night, but the students will be into it. They love Thursday night blackouts. So let's just hope the guys, play their tails off and give us something to cheer for.
That's true. Bubba, I know this is going to be a huge game, and we've got some great guests lined up here for this preview.
Yeah, we do. We're going to be catching up with Kevin Monroe, the longtime color analyst, alongside Jeff Charles, and then also Stephen Igo, and then Ryan Wallen from Temple.
It's going to be a great show. And Kyle,
star-studded show with
really
Kevin
is.
Monroe and Igo. I mean, it's the big guy.
24/7 guys.
And maybe we could
Ryan Wallen
have,
and
that
Igo.
Would be a great morning show. By the way, Monroe and Igo in the morning.
Monroe and Igo in the morning, and the best mix all day.
That's right. We'll talk sports and play great music for you all day long.
Yeah.
Speaking of mix, so what do you think? What are you guys thinking? We actually have a couple days removed from the big win at ODU. It's all now the Temple. How are you feeling now that we're 48 hours from that game?
Well, obviously, still glad we won. I was here in the interview with Monroe. Looking back in that game, I really felt like we dominated it. The score didn't indicate it. We just won by three, but I really felt we dominated the whole game. I'm concerned about the O-line against
Temple. Yeah.
Coming after. I thought our O-line has struggled some in creating run lanes all year, but then again, in the conversation with Monroe later, you'll hear, ODU was able to get a lot of pressure on us, so that's my concern. Looking forward to this Temple game. I'm concerned about our O-line against their defensive front.
And it's a bellwether game, Bubba, because I still believe, and maybe even after this game, but I still believe that we have a shot at making a bowl this year. If you want to do that, you need to steal one of these games like a Temple that's in the middle of this lineup as far as the schedule is concerned.
Yeah, Temple, obviously down at UCF, it's going to be very challenging, to say the least. And then USF at home right now on October 26th, that's certainly looking like the most winnable game this month.
Yeah, if you want to look ahead like that, I mean, as far as on paper, we got three wins, and we figure our best chance is South Florida, Connecticut, and Tulsa.
And yeah, SMU is looking.
If we can get those three, that would put us at 6-6. Now, if we can get to a bowl at 6-6 or not with two FCS wins, it's a different question. But I'm not worried about that. If we get to 6-6, I'm gonna celebrate like we won the national championship.
Exactly. We got three wins in September.
Yeah. Quite honestly, 5-7, and I'll be pretty happy. I mean, we win two games the rest of the way. I'll feel like this first year was a success. But just think about that, guys. We're 3-2, and we'll be halfway through the season. After Thursday night, and even if we don't pull off the upset and we're 3-3, if we can do that again the second half of the year, if we can go 3-3 the second half of the year, and then we'll be sitting there 6-6. So I don't know. I mean, don't want to jump ahead, and I don't want to chalk this game up Thursday night as a loss already, but just being real.
Not only that, but it's one thing that I know that Coach Houston will say it's the biggest game on our schedule because it's the one that we're getting ready to play, and there's no question about it. This Temple team has been very strong. I think this Temple defense is incredible. It's probably NC State and Temple probably had the best two defenses we've seen in the first half of the year, right, guys?
Yeah. Go ahead, Bill.
I was going to say definitely. Old Dominion, it's very talented defense for sure and doing a nice job under David Blackwell. But and we'll talk specifically about Temple with Ryan Wallen here later, a little bit later in the show.
Yeah, their defense is good. NC State, and Cincinnati later on in the year will be the best defenses we play all year. And UCF's got a good defense, too. I don't know. For some reason, guys, and maybe it's just wishful thinking, but ever since the summer, I just keep having in my head that we're going to go down to Orlando and upset UCF.
Hey, let's do it. Let's do it. And, you know,
we've got to get through this Temple game in an off week first. But
no question about it.
Most likely.
Hey, Kyle, I'll go on record right now. I'll make a Tony Collins guarantee. If we find a way to knock off UCF here in about 3 weeks, I will make the trip down to the airport. I promise you that.
Yeah, well, that's something for guarantee. You'll want to do that yourself. I mean, that's something for you. I mean,
well, not a guarantee. Well, whatever.
Yeah,
it's guaranteed. Means you're like naked in front of.
Here's the deal, everybody. Right. Knock off UCF. If we knock off UCF in a couple of weeks, Bubba will show up at the airport to welcome the team back butt naked.
Okay, I retract my previous statement.
It's a different
type of guarantee. Yeah.
Got it.
The kind you're talking about, if I'd have made that kind of guarantee against one of those opponents we previously played.
Well, I wonder how Stacey would feel about that.
What do you mean? How does she feel? She'd be right there at the airport.
Oh, butt naked?
Both of you be butt naked?
Well, that's what I'm talking about. If I followed through on the guarantee like Kyle said, but
no, what she, would she be doing no, there? I don't.
I'm joking. No, she'd be finding papers to cut me loose. That's what she'd be doing.
With the school system.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That would go over real well. Pictures on the internet, but that's a whole other show.
You can edit that part out.
Yeah.
What about pictures on the internet?
Because I do.
Anyway, I want to leave that.
I do have coworkers that listen to this. So.
Well, we can leave it in. I'm the one that brought it up. That you never said you'd be butt naked. I'm the one that made that. Bubba's a very respectable Christian gentleman.
Yeah. Yeah, anybody who knows me knows that would never happen. But
yes, it's all fun again. Yeah.
Yeah, let's have fun. You want to go to their first guest?
Yeah, Johnny, we'll catch up with Kevin Monroe, the color analyst on the Pirate Liverfield IMG College Network, and let's talk to K-Mo right now.
Well, Bubba, you know, this time of year being football, we love it, and one of the all-time greats in East Carolina. We're very happy to have our next guest on.
Yep, former Pirate defensive back and longtime color analyst on the Pirate Liverfield IMG College Sports Network, Kevin Monroe. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, we wanted to have you on. Big win on Saturday night with the Pirates against Old Dominion. We wanted to have you on to primarily get your thoughts on the game last week and certainly the program so far. First off, what did you think about Saturday night?
Well, it was exciting. I'll be honest with you. I thought it was going to be a close game going in, and I was nervous that, you know, it being on the road, it'd be a tough one for the Pirates to pull off. If you look at the trajectory of Old Dominion and where they are as a program, and then, honestly, the way the Pirates have been treading down over the last few years, we're kind of meeting right there in the middle. So we were about at the same level. So they, you know, in terms of the opponents that we played this year, you know, Gardner Webb, not very good. William & Mary was better than them, but still not very good. You know, you throw Navy and NC State out of there because they were both just different opponents and better than East Carolina right now. So this was kind of the measuring stick game. And I felt like the Pirates were able to go on the road, get a win on the road. They haven't done that in, you know, almost 2 years. And so I was impressed. You know, there was obviously some things that we could do better offensively, but defensively, that's the best game we've played in a long time.
Kevin, I kind of felt like, you know, we ended up winning the game by 3 points and led by 11 in the fourth. But except for a brief time in the third quarter right after the half, I felt like we had that game under control the whole way through. I almost feel like the score is misleading for how much we kind of dominated the game, particularly with the defense.
I completely agree. And, you know, people look at the NC State game and they say 34-6 or whatever it was. You know, that game was 14-3, I think, at halftime, and it was the Pirates were still kind of right in it. That game wasn't as much of a blowout as it kind of looked at the end. I think this game was very similar. I think the Pirates were very much in control of this game all the way through. I don't think ODU could figure anything out offensively. And you know, that quarterback, although he was super athletic, he was probably, you know, the worst passer of all the teams we've seen so far. He just didn't have much confidence in himself. And it just, you know, I was never under the impression that they were going to drive the ball down the field. When he threw that bomb pass for 64 yards, I almost fell out the window of the press box. I had no idea he could even do that.
And Kevin, how aggravated were you on that play that we had coverage and the guy didn't turn around and play the ball?
Well, it's been like that for a while now, you know, with defensive back play over the years. And, you know, it's always been the number one complaint I hear from fans is, why don't they find the football? And I happen to like the crew of corners we have now. I think Jaquan McMillan is a good player. I think Colby Gore is a good player. I think Malik Fleming is a good player. So I've seen some good players out there, and I'm feeling optimistic about things. My only thing is that that's the only kind of pass that can beat you in this scenario late in the game. So you just can't even be in that scenario. You have to be back there where they won't even think about throwing over the top of your head. Just it was a great throw and a great catch. We'll just leave it at that. But probably shouldn't have been in that situation.
Yeah.
And as far as the defense is concerned, Kevin, Kyle has actually been the first one to talk about it. But I've been really impressed with Bob Trott and the staff. I think the defense has been, considering maybe there's some talent issues, depth issues, obviously a D1. But overall, the defense has played way better than I expected at this point.
I agree. You never know what to think when you have two freshman guys playing corner spots, you know, until you get Colby Gore back. And, you know, up front, we thought we'd have, Turner and Price would be pretty good. We weren't sure how good. You didn't know about the linebackers. I really like Stringer, the outside linebacker. Obviously, Bivens has played well. The other guy's name is Xavier, I think, is leading the team in tackles, doing really well. So the linebacker play has been much better than we thought it was going to be. So that has helped. And then, you know, guys like Futrell just, you know, getting that pass rush going was huge for us on Saturday night. So I'm very impressed with the things they've done. I think they've kept the offense in it at times. I think the offense has held us back at times. So when we can get the offense up to speed to where the defense is, we're going to be a pretty good team.
Taking a look at this this week against Temple, Temple is obviously going to be the best passing game we've faced since NC State, to say the least. And so, not specifics, but just talk about the way we're covering right now, and in terms of like the way we're getting pressure with our front. We got tremendous pressure against ODU. So talk about that. I know Russo for Temple's thrown 6 picks.
Yeah, I mean, I think this Temple offense is averaging about 480 yards per game, 303 through the air, 177 on the ground or so. So they're a very adept offense. You know, Temple over the years has always been known for their defensive play, and they will be again. When we see them on Thursday night, they'll obviously be very good defensively. But, yeah, this will be the first time that we've seen a quarterback that can throw it all around the park consistently, even against NC State. I didn't think the McKay kid, he was pretty good, but he's a young player. And, you know, this passing game that we'll see on Thursday will be even better than that one. So, there'll be opportunities out there for the DBs, as you mentioned, the 6 picks. And the thing I've been most excited about with this defensive backfield play this year is that they always are at least in the right spot. They didn't make the play, you know, on the deep ball and at the end of the game against ODU, but the DB was right there, and I feel like that's kind of been the common thread, whereas in the past you would always see receivers running free, miss assignments, miss alignment. So I feel much better about where we are now. And then also, with that added pass rush, that's going to help the DB play a lot. I mean, you know, I had a pretty good career, but I also had guys like Rod Coleman and Travis Dart and Norris McCleary, you know, rushing the quarterback. So it made things a lot easier.
You played in 3 Thursday night games, Kevin, while you were here. Talk about the challenges of for a player playing a Thursday night game. I guess there's an advantage to being at home versus going on the road to play a Thursday night game. Does it make things that much different playing on Thursday versus Saturday? Does it really mess your week up that much, or is it overblown?
I don't think so. I think it's overblown. Obviously, if you have a long trip to travel, that may change things a little bit. But, you know, the way the schedule used to work, and I think it's fairly similar now, is that you played on Saturday. On Sunday was kind of a walk-through conditioning kind of day. Monday, players had off. Tuesday was your hardest day of the week. You kind of got all the information and did all the hard on-the-field work. Wednesday was a scaled-down version of Tuesday. And then Thursday, you kind of brought it all together with special teams. And then Friday was a walk-through. So just kind of back that up now. Now, you don't get Sunday as a light day. Sunday, you kind of come in, and it's your more focused day where you kind of get the download from everything. And then Monday, you don't get off. It becomes your heavy input day. Tuesday is a little bit lesser than Wednesday. And then all of a sudden, Wednesday, you got your walkthrough. So it just condenses the schedule just a little bit. But you take out the off day, and you end up getting that off day on Friday. And then you take off the super light day after Saturday. And so there's really not less practice time. It's just less off recuperation time, I would say. So as long as guys aren't banged up, there'll be some guys that, you know, got banged up in the Saturday game, and so they won't have as much time to recuperate. But other than that, in terms of learning the scheme and being able to practice it, not a whole lot of difference.
Kevin, as far as Temple's concerned, I mean, this is a program, obviously, they went about 20 years without a winning season, got kicked out of the Big East, got things back together in the MAC, and then they had a couple of down seasons. Those were the only losing seasons in the last decade plus when they moved back into the Big East in the American. So over the last several years, several coaches have done very well there, and they have a first-year coach in Rod Carey. So really, and just taking a look at things, I mean, and how do you see this one playing out? I could see it, in order for the Pirates to win it, kind of being like the game in 2015 that was also a painted black game.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be tough. You know, if this game were on the road, I'd give the Pirates very little chance of winning. But I think at home in front of the Dowdy Ficklin, you know, crowd, coming off a big win, the defense on a high, I think they have an opportunity to keep the game close and win it late. It's just going to be tough. I mean, Temple is playing at a different level right now. You saw what they did versus Maryland. That was playing really, really well at the time they played. They play well offensively. They're even better defensively. They're well coached. And it's, you know, they're playing in a state, in a city, in an area that people don't even care about college football, and they're still able to thrive. I mean, that's a pro town, and so I have nothing but respect for them. And I think the Pirates will do fine because I think defensively they can keep the game close. It's just going to be a tough one to win.
As far as the offensive side of the ball, Kevin, I had a question too. You're talking about earlier with me about when the offense can really match the defense, then things will be a better team. Do you think As far as the offensive side of the ball, do you think this week will be maybe the, I hate to say to use the term, it's overblown, overused, but the breakout week for the Pirates? I mean, I think Holton did well this past week, and maybe we're starting to see something really special from him early on.
Well, you know, he completed only 8 passes in that game, right? But of the 8 passes, I think 4 of them were 28 yards or more. So that's the thing that I think Pirate fans are so excited about, because we know he has a big, strong arm. We've just been wondering why he won't throw the ball deep. And to be honest with you, I think the whole Reed Herring thing played a lot into that. I think he was nervous about throwing interceptions. I think he might have been looking over his shoulder. He was playing conservative. Now that part of the game is gone, and Reed's gone. He didn't have to worry about being yanked out of the game for making a bad play. Not that Coach Houston would have done that anyway, but maybe that's just how he felt. And so he was able to cut it loose, and he made some plays, and I expect him to keep making plays. Now, as far as this week being the breakout week, that's going to be tough, because this is a very, very good defense. So I wouldn't put too much thought into this week alone, but I do think as the season progresses, he will get better. And there will be some teams out there like the South Floridas that aren't playing that great right now that he can, you know, maybe step out there and make some big-time plays. This game, I think we're going to have to move the ball methodically, you know, try to get some first downs, rely on Jake Verity, try to pop one deep every now and then, try to break one. I don't think we're going to, you know, have a blowout scoring game. And
this Temple team, or Temple program, I should say, and certainly brands himself on their physical style of play, very much like what Coach Houston inspires to build here at East Carolina.
Yeah, I think they're, you know, they're only giving up 100 yards, 104 yards on the ground, rushing, only 10 points to opponents. It's just tough sledding, and you bring that against an offense of East Carolina that hasn't exploded for, you know, big time points outside of the Gardner Webb game. It's going to be tough for East Carolina to score points on a consistent fashion, I think. Now, listen, it's not my job to do the game planning, so that, you know, maybe, you know, Coach Kirkpatrick can find some things in the Temple defense that he likes that he can exploit, and maybe it is a big day. But just based on what they've given up thus far, that's going to be tough. So the Pirates are going to have to play very, very well, special teams-wise and defensively, to keep this game close in the hopes that they can get a turnover or something, get some short field, and somebody makes a play. But, yeah, this Temple team is tough. They don't give up a whole lot, and it's going to be tough to beat them at home or not.
Kevin, what my fear is their front is going to eat our offensive line's lunch.
Yeah, I mean – up until this most recent game, I don't think Holton has really had a problem with the QB rush and getting sacked. He's been relatively clean all season long. Now, the running game, the running lanes haven't necessarily been there, but they've done a decent job in pass protection. He just has, for whatever reason, you know, been a little bit hesitant with the ball, holding on to it too long, what have you. This past game, he was put on the ground a lot, and he was hit a lot. And so that kind of showed maybe some holes in that offensive line. And you got to figure that, you know, Temple will be just as good, probably better, and we'll be rushing him all the time. I think we'll see him run more this game. I think there'll be more design quarterback draws. I think there'll be more screens. I think there'll be more running back draws, because that's what you have to do to kind of offset the rush of a defensive line like that. That's what the Saints did last night against the Cowboys. Every time they rushed upfield, they just dropped a little screen in behind them. That's how you beat these teams that have really, really aggressive defenses. So certainly they're going to be able to scheme against that. I just don't know if it'll be enough. Time will tell when the game gets going.
Well, there's one thing that that maybe we'll have a little silver lining as we wrap it up here. After Temple beat Maryland, they came out and laid an egg at Buffalo. So maybe they'll do it again. They beat Georgia Tech. Maybe they'll come out and lay an egg against the Pirates.
Well, I wouldn't go to sleep tonight and pray about that. I think they're going to come prepared. They'll be ready, and you know, maybe they'll overlook the Pirates, and maybe that's what happened in the Buffalo game. Maybe they overlooked Buffalo because they had such a big win. But certainly to expect them to lay more than one egg in a season, I think is a bit much. But I think if we play with confidence, then we can build upon the success that we had against ODU, and we'll play good enough to where it won't matter how good they're playing, we'll still be competitive.
Yeah. It's going to be a lot of fun, Kevin. In fact, I know that people like myself listen to the broadcast, but maybe people that don't listen to podcasts, or I'm sorry, don't listen to the radio, maybe they need to check it out. Where can they find you guys?
Oh, gosh. I'm the wrong one to ask about the individual stations.
okay.
I just
tune in radio app, I know.
Yeah.
And then locally, 107.9 and 94.3, obviously, in the Greenville area. But and then
well,
they can, I guess,
Dave,
check their local.
Well, why did you ask?
Well, I was trying to give you a chance to plug the stations. It's all-
I do know one, Dave. I know. I normally listen on TuneIn, but on 1380 it used to be 1380 WTOB or the call letters in Winston-Salem. I do know that one.
That's
well, I show up in the booth and I talk, and that's what happens. Hopefully, people find me and listen.
We'll definitely find you, Kevin. Good luck on the broadcast, and very excited. Hopefully, we have a lot of Pirates and wearing black on Thursday night.
Absolutely. Appreciate it, guys.
Thank you very much, Kevin. Appreciate him saving us from getting the show off the rails there. We're back on track now, and Kevin, he's definitely one of the best. Appreciate him very, very much. I'm very excited about this game on Thursday. Let's talk again about the uniforms. With us winning again, like I said, on the playback for Sunday, I just really felt like with the program heading in the right direction, we have these great uniforms. And you want to remind folks, Kevin, listen to me, Bubba, do you want to remind folks about what they're
doing? You okay, Dave?
Thursday?
Yeah, well, it's painted black game, of course. So the Pirates broke out the black uniforms for the first time back in 2013 and 2014. Those seem to be most people's favorites, and they did have another variety of the black uniform in 2015 and the ones in 2016 that they got on a short turnaround from Adidas that were see-through. See-through. And what I say see-through.
When I say see-through, folks, I'm talking about seeing the shoulder pads and so forth. But they were all right.
Translucent uniforms. That's a good idea. We're going to do that. I particularly like that for all the co-eds. We're going to have see-through night. That's a great idea. I'm going to run that past ECU administration.
Yeah, I won't touch that one. that's not a subject matter to talk about right now. What about hey Kyle, on Thursday night, I got a question for you because you and I are music nerds. What song, let's see if we can figure out right now, you and I,
all right,
what song will Still Life put a dance beat to?
Fade to Black, who's that by?
I mean, I was thinking, man, can we do Sweet Caroline or
No, it's a blackout. They're going to put a dance beat to Fade to Black. You know, is that the Doors? Who is that?
No, that's you're talking about the Rolling Stones. Paint It Black.
I want it to turn black. It's all Paint It Black. That's the name of the song. All right.
And back of course,
we'll go Paint It Black. We'll think about how ridiculous that would be for them to put a dance beat to Paint It Black. No, you could do it. I could definitely see it the Back in Black. I could definitely hear that in my head.
Yeah.
I don't know. And I'm not picking on the Still Life, but
I like them, but yeah.
Yeah, I love them. They're my favorite. But God Almighty, okay. I wish they quit putting dance beats on and stuff that didn't need dance beats.
Right.
Okay. Did y'all talk about the when I lost you guys, and were you talking about the video they put out there teasing it?
No,
because that was the song that they had teasing it.
Well, Paint It Black.
Yeah, the one that Dave was just referring to, the Rolling Stones.
Yeah, Paint It Black. We also did that back in 2013 when we debuted them. We used that song. So I think that song's awesome. Our entrance is always Purple Haze, and then it fades into Back in Black when we do a blackout. I actually wish they would do it in the Fade to Black. I think that would be just kind of unique to come out to that. Fade to Black.
Well,
Fade to Black. I just need to shut up. I'm going to just sit here and shut up.
No, as far as Back in Black, and that's something we've done a few times. I was going to bring that up. It'll be interesting to see if we do it again, because they'll start Purple Haze, and then after several seconds of Purple Haze, they'll turn off and go into Back in Black.
Yeah, I like that. I think it would be cooler again if they did Purple Haze and Paint It Black, just because it would be more unique.
It'd be definitely different, and certainly both songs from that era of the middle to late 60s as well.
Exactly, yeah.
Hendrix and the Rolling Stones, so you can't go wrong there. Sound like a classic rock station now.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I'll play another Lynyrd Skynyrd song.
Yeah, exactly. You know, they call me the breeze. I keep rolling down the road.
And speaking of rolling down the road, you guys want to go to Stephen Igo? Because he Igo's
yes.
down the road. I don't know.
Yeah, let's go to him. Let's go now to the editor, the head man. Hoist the Colors, hoistthecolors.net, Stephen Igo, and let's go to Stephen right now. Well, one of our favorite people of all this podcast, one of our favorite guests and original guests on this podcast, but we're very happy to have him back.
Yeah, I always enjoy catching up with Stephen Igo from hoistthecolors.net, and Stephen, welcome into the show.
Yeah, guys, glad to join as always. Hope you're doing well.
Appreciate you very much. I want to let everybody know we're recording this a little bit early because on Friday, we've got a big game tomorrow, ODU, but we're recording this because we wanted to have you on for our Temple preview, but we're going to be talking a lot about hot topics. So I go first off the gate. One thing I've been dying to talk to you about all week, and I don't want to blow up your cell phone or send you a lot of text messages, but I'm very confused still, maybe I shouldn't be, about the whole transfer situation between Reed Herring and Hassan Howell. I've been reading, first of all, I'll give you lots of props. I know you've had to work hard on hoistthecolors.net, but reading that, trying to understand that situation, I guess we should start there because that's been on a lot of people's minds this week.
Yeah, you know, it's very rare during a game week for an important game to be covering transfer news, but I think this is something we'll have to get used to in the college football world over the next coming years just because of the four-game rule. The weirdest thing about the Reed Herring situation is it has nothing to do with the four-game rule, so that's why it was so unexpected. You know, I can really understand Hassan Howell You know, I think his role is going to be starting to get limited for the rest of the season. He's got a redshirt year available. It's the 4-game mark. It makes sense. Reed, it just, you kind of scratch your head at it, other than the fact that he's just apparently fed up with everything that's gone on, and, you know, having to sit behind Holton Ahlers, having to hear all the stuff about Holton Ahlers being the hometown kid, that, you know, the fan favorites, all that sort of stuff. And I guess he's just reached a breaking point, not seeing any snaps against William and Mary. So it's a difficult situation because it really leaves ECU in a bind from a quarterback depth perspective. I personally don't think Brian Gagg is ready quite yet. You know, I think he can operate in very limited form, but it's going to be tough if something happens to Holton. And, it just makes you scratch your head because in some ways you get it, but in other ways, you know, Reed is kind of leaving the team out to dry, so to speak. And maybe there's somebody in his ear saying, hey, if you get in the transfer portal now, you know, we'll go ahead and save a spot for you or whatnot. But backroom deals like that are done in college football, and the story may come out later. But from ECU's side, it's tough to know, or it's tough to really understand what exactly happens at this point in the year for it to happen.
You know, I heard that somebody, one of the fans, say that hopefully it won't be like a family situation like Gardner Minshew, but look how things turned out for him.
Yeah, you know, and you have to wonder if the Gardner Minshew stuff, all this stuff in the news, maybe got to him a little bit. You know, it's got to at least make you wonder if you read Aaron, hey, I could be the next Gardner Minshew. You know, 2 years from now, I could be playing in the NFL. Do I think that will happen? Probably not. But you never say never, especially in the Gardner Minshew situation. I'll be first to admit, you know, when Gardner left, I thought he was a solid quarterback, but I didn't think it was going to be huge at all for East Carolina at the time. But, you know, we'll see how it transpires. You know, hopefully more will come out in time, and we'll know more clarity then.
Question I had for you is, as far as Reed's concerned, with him having redshirted, do you think will he be completing his degree in December where he can be a grad transfer?
Yeah, from what I understand, he will. He is on track to graduate this December. He has been for a while now. And that's why, you know, the most interesting thing about it is he basically had a handshake agreement with Reed going into this season once Holton was named the starter, that, hey, if Holton's a starter all year and at the end of the season you want to play somewhere else, we'll help you find a home. So that's why it really surprised the coaches that he went ahead and transferred now rather than wait till the end of the year, because, you know, something could happen and he could end up starting, you know, 5 or 6 games if Holton, you know, suffers an injury. So, but he does, you know, he will graduate. He will get the chance to play somewhere else, you know, whether it's FBS or a high caliber FCS program, you know, remains to be seen.
Do you think do you think it was mismanaged at all during the season by the staff? I mean, you said that the handshake agreement was made that if he didn't see significant playing time, that they would help him find a spot come December. Do you think that maybe the staff should have worked harder to get Reed in the game at different times and meaningful times, particularly maybe when Holton was struggling a little?
I mean, you can second guess it and say that, you know, I think it's a fair argument. But at the same time, you know, do you really just want to give a guy time just to keep him happy and keep him on the team if you're not really sold on him as a quarterback? You know, I think it's pretty clear from talking with people around the program, despite Holton's struggles, they believe in his ability. They think he gives them the best chance to win. They think he's the best leader. He's the best teammate at the position. You know, he's a guy who elevates the play of people around him. So, you know, could they have maybe gotten Reed some time and changed his mind? Maybe. But it's also one of those situations where, you know, once the season starts, you don't really want to have a quarterback controversy. And if you end up putting Reed in every week, fans are going to be saying, you know, who should start. It kind of turns into a separate storyline each week, like we've seen the past 3 or 4 years since Shane Carden graduated. So,
yeah,
it is one of those deals, and from that perspective, where you can make an argument both ways, really.
And one thing I did want to point out to people that people seem to forget, and if you just go look at the stats, and I wonder if this is translating in practice, Reed's touchdown to interception ratio last year was terrible, and Holton's was rather strong. And Holton's taken care of the ball so far this year. And to a coach like Coach Houston, who seems to be a pretty conservative coach offensively, taking care of the football is going to be above all else, the quarterback position.
Yeah, and you factor in the fact that Holton can run. I know he maybe hasn't done it as much as last year, but I promise you, if people think the running game is bad now, you know, you put Reed back there and take away really the threat of a running quarterback, and it becomes that much harder to run the football. So, you know, that's something that people forget last year too. You know, Holton coming in and being a starter actually opened up the running game a decent amount, you know, still not above average towards the latter half of last year. But when Reed was the guy, they couldn't run the ball at all because nobody accounted for the running back in the running game. And that's one less defender you really got to worry about. So that's another factor too. Yes, Holton's not playing perfect by any stretch of the imagination. He's still working on making his reads quicker. And you know, he's not getting much help from the receivers and other lines. So I think that everybody involved has to be better. And now the biggest concern is just you've got to keep Holton healthy. You know, I don't know if you wrap him in bubble wrap or what, but they got to figure out something. It's one of those deals where if he goes down, he's going to really struggle with football games.
Yeah, me and Dave were talking about that yesterday, and Dave was concerned that, you know, will we be ultra-conservative with running him now because of the injury aspect of Brian Gag being behind him? I don't think you can. I think if you change his playing style and don't let Holton be Holton, then what's the point of having him out there anyway? So I think you just got to roll the dice and let him play the position the way he plays the position naturally.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, his greatest strength is running the football, and if you handcuff him and don't let him do that, it's one of those things where the defense is going to be able to tee off in terms of rushing the passer and really be able to sit back and make life tough throwing the football. So, you know, it's really kind of a double-edged sword, unfortunately, for ECU, but I do agree that you kind of have to let him go play and then just make sure you emphasize to him that he needs to get out of bounds or slide basically any time he can.
That's what I was going to say, is manage the situation, which they're trying to do this year, so he won't get hurt. It's a very fact of that very thing. And also, if you see opening, go for it, but don't try to make a play every single time when there might be times when that could be the play to knock you out for the rest of the season. So it's kind of I guess he's going to have to make better decisions like Coach Houston said, I guess pre-snap and also during the actual play. Igo, I want to talk to you too about, I know the guys wanted to as well, a couple sports, hard to believe, basketball and baseball. We have fall baseball starting. Do you have any insight there? I know it's very brand new as we're recording this interview as far as the baseball team, but do you have any early insights?
Well, they're just starting practice now, so nothing too early. I did have a chance to meet the new pitching coach and was really impressed with just having the chance to sit down and talk with him, getting to feel him out a little bit. And I think he's going to be a good fit here. You know, he's more of a relaxed guy, and whereas Cliff is obviously upbeat, and it's one of those situations where, you know, I think they're going to offset each other a little bit. Cliff's so energetic, and Coach Dietrich is more laid back. I think he'll really be able to work with the pitchers well. The biggest thing is they got to figure out a way to maximize the talent of Gavin Williams on the mound. Figure out if he's going to be a starter, figure out if he's going to be a closer. He's going into his junior year, he's draft eligible. I think how he develops will really play a big role in the success of this pitching staff. Obviously, you got Cooch Manor coming back. I think the freshman to watch is Skylar Brooks. A lot of people assume that Rod is going to be the shortstop of the future, but I would not be surprised to see Skylar emerge as that shortstop. Based off what I've heard, he'll at least play third base or short. Really talented kid, could pitch some too. Powerful bat, built well. They got a lot of new guys, so it's going to be an interesting fall to see how all it transpires. But I think that the raw talent is there for them to be good again. It's just a matter of how it all comes together.
Been over to basketball practice yet? I would imagine we look nothing like we did before.
Yeah, I went to a workout this summer. You know, we're recording this on Friday. I'm actually about to head out there today to do some interviews. And so, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing the team. But just based off what I saw over the summer, night and day compared to last year. And, you know, I had Coach Rafael Chilius, the associate head coach on my radio show, at one point earlier this month. And, you know, he made an observation that was pretty clear to me, too. When they just line up the stretch at the beginning of practice across the practice court, I mean, the guys are so long and lengthy where they take up basically the entire trip. And last year it was not like that at all. You just have so much more length. You just got a team that looks like a basketball team. And I just haven't been able to say that in the past. And, there's a lot of chemistry concerns in terms of how it's all going to come together. But the other thing I like about it, too, is I've heard these guys are in the gym a ton, getting up shots, playing pickup games on their own, which is actually how Tremont Robinson got hurt. But it's one of those deals where they're putting in the time to gel, and I think they all come from winning backgrounds, so they're used to winning. They expect to win, and they're not here just to have a so-so season for basketball.
Steven, the schedule was finalized recently, so with that being said, we knew the non-conference opponents for some time, or we have, I should say, but with the conference schedule being finalized, was there anything that really jumped off the page there?
Well, the biggest thing was you've got a chance to start conference play with I don't think it's maybe the most favorable schedule in terms of the world, because every game in this league is difficult outside of maybe Tulane, but you've got a chance to at least play some games at home. You know, you open with Wichita State, and something that was pointed out to me the other day is, it's a New Year's game, so their students likely won't be in town, so that at least takes away some of their home atmosphere. But then you come back for three straight home games, and we all know how important those home games are to ECU fans. And really, in conference play, it's been tough sledding on the road. ECU's best shot to get off to a good start in conference is to play at home, and they play at home for three straight games, so, even a 2-2 start, if they could pull it off, would be a big beginning to conference play, and based off what we've seen in the past. So I think getting those three games at home early is crucial for the confidence of the team. Hopefully they can rack up some wins in non-conference and kind of get some buzz behind the program, and then going into conference, if they get off to a good start, I think that could be something that carries them through conference play.
Steven, Thursday night, Pirates take on the Temple Owls. We're recording this on Friday, as we mentioned. We got the Monarchs this weekend. Temple's got Georgia Tech. I've watched Temple play. Their defense looks stout against Scotty Moe in Maryland. Then they turn around and give up 30-some points to Buffalo and lose. So which Temple team is going to show up Thursday night in Greenville?
That's a great question, man, and one that I would love to have the answer to. The Buffalo game, you could kind of see it coming, just because of the natural letdown road game after a big home win.
And Buffalo's not bad these days.
And Buffalo's not terrible. Buffalo, and they beat Temple in Temple last year. So it was one of those things where Buffalo probably expected to win the game. Now, I don't think ECU's going to go out and pull a Buffalo and win by that margin or dominate the game like they did. I think Temple will be much more focused with it being a conference game. But, if you're playing a Thursday night game on a short week, you would much rather it be at home than on the road. I think that has to be a factor. Temple, it's going to be another emotional game versus Georgia Tech. They're playing their former head coach and Jeff Collins, regardless of how that game plays out. I mean, that's a pretty important game to them. And then they got to turn around and go on the road on a short week. So, a lot will be dictated as far as momentum based on what happens this weekend. But I don't think it's an unwinnable game. For ECU, I do think they'll probably have to win the football game in the 20s or so, much like they're going to have to win a lot of games this year, because I think Temple's D-line is legit. They got a lot of guys back, and they're going to be tough to block up front.
Yeah, that's no doubt. After the improvement, even though it may be minimal against William & Mary, so we'll see with ODU tomorrow and then also Temple, exactly how much improvement, that we can show in the running game for sure.
Yeah, I mean, the running game to me is they've done it versus two FBS or FCS teams, and hopefully against ODU, which has stopped the run well, they can show some promise there. But, you're down Darius Penix, you're down Hassan Howell. Really, you're taking guys who were on scout team a week ago and now counting on them in the running game outside of Demetrius Moody. So that's going to be interesting to watch.
Any info on Penix being back? We haven't been able to get any updates.
Yeah, I mean, they're keeping it pretty tight to the vest. My original timeline I heard was anywhere from 3 to 5, 6 weeks.
Wow.
It's an uncommon injury, to say the least. A pinched nerve in the neck is what I've heard. And that's something I want to say Terrell Green, former ECU receiver when he was a sophomore and junior, he had one in the shoulder neck area. He ended up missing basically the entire season. So it's something that can linger. But I think they're hopeful of getting them back towards the middle of the schedule, but nothing. It's kind of a day-to-day, week-to-week type of deal.
Now, my understanding of pinched nerves, now, I don't want to come across as ignorant here, but isn't that more of a just pain thing? I mean, can you worsen that injury is what I'm asking.
I honestly don't know, man. I don't want to claim to be a doctor.
Dr. Igo, paging Dr. Igo.
I think it's one of those deals where if it's in the neck area and you're having numbness and all that, they want to probably stay away from it just to make sure. And also, if you're a running back and you're having numbness and you're carrying the football in your arms, I mean, it's got to be hard to hold on. And
pinched nerves hurt like crazy, and they can cause some weird symptoms too.
Yeah, so I think it's just one of those deals where they're going to have to take it day by day till he starts feeling better.
Well, and we're going to have to rely on guys, like you said, they're young. But the good news, Igo, is the fact that we've got a lot of good things. I'll ask you a recruiting question. Any recruiting news before we let you go?
Well, as of the time we're recording this, I can't divulge anything, but I think by the time this airs, we could have some very good recruiting news, especially from the running back position. Raji Harris is expected to announce his commitment on Saturday. I will be pretty surprised if it's not East Carolina. Big-time running back out of South Carolina. He's got offers from West Virginia, Tennessee, Memphis, UCF. So you want to talk about upgrading the running back room, he would be a big one. So, and also I went to see Mason Garcia last week. You want to talk about a stud, absolute beast of a quarterback. Mason Garcia is going to be a special talent at East Carolina. So they need to keep him committed, get him signed and on campus, because he could be an absolute difference maker for the Pirates.
How's about him doing with his grades? Have you heard anything? I heard that was the only concern with him.
Right.
Yeah, he's making progress. I think, they're pretty confident they'll be able to get him at the school, barring something crazy. So at this point, I think they feel good about it. He's still got some work to do, but they've been by his side kind of throughout the process, and I think they're pretty happy with where it's at and think he'll make it eventually.
In general, is it Houston's ties when he was at the Citadel? What's up with all the big-time commits out of South Carolina?
Well, you got Houston's ties at the Citadel, Roy Tesh from the Citadel, who was with them. J.P. Gunter is running the recruiting show basically behind the scenes as the director of player personnel. He was at the Citadel for basically a decade. He knows a lot of people in that area. And then, Darrell Sims has very good ties to South Carolina. You've just got a lot of guys on the staff that have very good ties to South Carolina, and I think it'll be something that you'll really continue to see. I think they'll jump into Virginia Beach a little more going forward. And then, it's a pretty weak year for North Carolina in the state, but next year's class, 2021, may be the strongest class I've covered for the state of North Carolina. So I expect to see more in-state commits next year. But at the same time, if you've got a pipeline and connections to South Carolina, why not use it?
Yeah, I like Coach Sims. I would imagine he does pretty well with recruits.
Yeah, he's really good.
And, Stephen, as far as Hoist the Colors right now, do you have any specials? I want to make sure we plug that before we let you run. I know you got a big day and a big weekend.
We're running a special we've been running for a while now, but I don't think a lot of people realize it. You can get your first month for $1 coverage, which is a pretty cool deal that we've been running network-wide lately. We've had a lot of people take advantage of it, and I've mentioned it to a number of people who didn't even realize it was the deal we're running. So it's one of those things where you get your first month for $1 now. You'll see us tweet it out every now and then. We've been running it basically since August, and we've added a lot of members. It's been encouraging to see the feedback of the Pirate Nation, even during some down times over the past few years. But, I really think as we continue to see this thing move forward, there's a lot of optimism, and I've just really been encouraged by the support we've gotten on the boards, on the forums, and, I think it'll make a big difference. Especially once ECU starts winning again, I think we'll continue to grow. But either way, our loyal members have been there from the beginning, and that's what means the most.
No doubt about it, people. You can go to hoistthecolors.net. Stephen Igo, appreciate you, man. And I tell you what, I hope it's a really busy weekend for a lot of exciting news. And we'll be checking it out on hoistthecolors.net.
All right, guys. I appreciate it, as always.
Thank you very much, Igo, as he always looks out for us. And, man, I tell you what, the guy is a genius when it comes to recruiting. And that's why, folks, you need to do yourself a favor. Go to hoistthecolors.net, right, guys?
Yeah, Hoist the Colors, always a great spot to get recruiting news. Guys at 24/7 do a good job of keeping everything up to date with pirate recruiting and just recruiting as a whole. You can keep up not just with East Carolina, but if you like to follow recruiting from other schools in the American or whatever, it's a great source.
It really is, and just the fact that I appreciate him because apparently he listens to our podcast while working out, so hopefully he won't fall off the treadmill or he's like lifting weights right now.
Well, you know while he's working out, you know, my wife said he looks like a small He-Man.
He-Man, yeah, he's a beast.
No, what I mean, he just his face kind of looks like, you know. Yeah,
oh,
He-Man.
Oh, He-Man, yeah.
He-Man, yeah.
I used to love
not
that
a He-Man. No, he looks like a small version of He-Man, yes.
Okay,
you know,
I got
cartoon
you.
Character, Masters of the Universe.
I got you, Masters of the Universe, no doubt about it. I tell you what, we're stacked. Speaking of recruiting, we're stacked and packed. We're definitely going to be locked and loaded the next year. So, folks that are by the way, I wanted to say this on the playback, and I forgot. I just realized. All those people that are criticizing Houston, where are they now? Where are you now?
They're still there. Why don't you do yourself a favor, Dave, and come on over to the Pirates Cove and participate? They're still there.
I missed the last day. I must have missed it.
Yeah, there's lots of people bitching and complaining. Still wanting Mike Houston to go 12-0 in year one.
Wow.
Don't forget Holt Naylor sucks.
Why don't they
take Holton out and put in Brian Gag? I have no problem.
Folks know that's. I'm sorry to cut you off, Kyle. That's absolutely nothing against Brian Gag whatsoever.
No, absolutely not. He's just a true freshman that hasn't had any experience. And so, I mean, I just get tired of people saying things that just don't make any kind of sense. What do you expect Mike Houston to do in year one? He's 3-2. What more do you want? I mean, he's not going to wave a magic wand.
No.
As far as Holton, I think, has underperformed. But he's going to keep improving.
He's only played, what, 10 games? I mean,
yeah,
he's going to keep
improving. And, you know, back when Reed was still here, look, people act like Reed was Joe Montana last year. That just wasn't the case. He was a turnover machine. His touchdown to interception ratio was horrible.
That's bad.
There was at times he don't like pressure, and there was times where he was acting scared. I mean, do you guys remember his performance against NC State in last year?
Oh yeah.
I mean, I don't understand people. We can't, you know, Holton's our best offensive quarterback. People need to quit complaining about it and support him, and hopefully he'll get better. I mean, this is, and I'm speaking to a minority, not a majority. Majority of the people have good sense and aren't saying things, but there's a vocal minority that just needs to get a grip on reality.
Yeah, they need to have. I tell you what, I'll pay for you. Those people, I'll pay for them to have a new hobby because they obviously don't know about the hobby they have now and following the Pirates. It's a hobby to them, and that's fine. But get a new hobby if you don't understand, like, and understand the hobby.
Well, some people, I've made the same before, some people shouldn't be allowed to watch football.
That's true. By the way, guys, this is a Temple preview. Do you want to go to our next guest, Bubba?
Yeah, we'll catch up with Ryan Wallen, and we caught up with Ryan last year during the football season, also for basketball, and he does an excellent job for Al's Daily, and let's talk to Ryan Wallen of Al's Daily, their 24/7 site right now. Thursday's a Paint It Black game. The Pirates will be hosting Temple at Dowdy-Ficklin Stadium, 8 p.m. on ESPN, and now to get the Temple Al's perspective from Al's Daily, their 24/7 site. We're very excited to be joined by our good friend. We had him on last year and to talk football and basketball, Ryan Wallen. Ryan, welcome in.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely. We appreciate you coming on the show. We enjoyed catching up with you last year. And one thing's for sure, the Owls have certainly had the Pirates' number since joining the AAC. 5 straight victories over East Carolina. So we know we have our work cut out on Thursday night for sure. Taking a look at the Temple program, it's one that's had so much success over the last decade plus, and you guys have a new coach yourself in Rod Carey coming over from Northern Illinois. So tell us a little bit about how you guys feel about Coach Carey and this program through the first 4 games.
Well, I think with Coach Carey, you've really seen a return to more of the Matt Rhule-esque style of coaching. I know a lot of people, you know, Jeff Collins was liked in Philly, but there were some questions as far as the fan base had about his methods, I guess you could say, because he was very much a promotional coach. He was very much about PR and promoting the program to gain that national media attention. But, you know, there were some head-scratching losses that he had, and, you know, the fan base didn't like that. But, you know, Jeff Collins did also do something that only 2 other Temple coaches did in their tenures at Temple, and that was win a bowl game. So definitely had the ups and downs. But, you know, with Coach Carey, like I said, he's very more, much more of an old-school coach. You know, he wants to let his team do the talking on the field rather than, you know, talking before the game and all. So I think the fan base likes that, you know, hard nose return to that grit style of football that Temple has been accustomed to over the past, like you said, decade or so.
Right.
And he obviously got off to a good start. You know, they smashed Bucknell, which that was good after, especially after last year when Temple lost to FCS Villanova at home. And then, you know, they followed that up with a good win against a nationally ranked Maryland team that was just lighting up teams on the scoreboard. So he definitely got favorable opinion from those first 2 games. And then the Owls went up to Buffalo 2 weeks ago, and then they got manhandled. And I think some people, you know, took a step back and were like, well, this is a Buffalo team that Carey was very familiar with being at Northern Illinois. This is a Buffalo team that lost a lot of talent from last year's 10-win team, and people were a little concerned considering the Owls got beat pretty much at their own game. You know, the Bulls controlled the clock. They ran the ball. Temple made a lot of really bad mistakes, and I think people had some questions. But here Temple followed that up this week by taking on Collins and his Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets up at the Link, and you know, Temple pitched a defensive shutout and only gave up a safety to Georgia Tech. So I think the fan base is fully on board with Carey. Like I said, they really like the style he brings. It's more of that grit and the Temple tough motto that Temple likes to promote for its football team.
Yeah, that's something. That's what we were talking about, actually, on the podcast a little earlier, as far as that Temple tough motto that has certainly the Owls have lived up to over the last decade or so. But Anthony Russo, the redshirt junior quarterback, 6'4", 235. Talk a little bit about his play thus far. I know he's thrown 6 picks and 3 in that Buffalo loss that you referenced. So tell us a little bit about what Pirate fans can expect out of Russo.
Well, I've said this before. Anthony Russo has what it takes to be an NFL quarterback. Now, whether he becomes an NFL quarterback will be all dependent on him. I believe he said after the game against Georgia Tech this week that he needs to really evaluate his decision making, because in that Georgia Tech game, even he threw on the first drive of the game, Owls are in the red zone and he throws a pick in the end zone, thinking that he could fit, you know, a ball in a tight window with his arm strength, but it gets picked off by a Georgia Tech corner. So it was good to hear him admit that he still needs to work on his decision making, because that has been the biggest question mark as to his play so far since taking over as Temple starting quarterback last season against Maryland. In that span, he has 20 interceptions in probably about 13 games right about now. So that's not good numbers for what you want your starting quarterback to be at, especially when, you know, he's thrown 24 touchdowns in that time as well. So that's that's what you want to see, but you obviously want to see those interception numbers come down. But, you know, with Russo, you get a guy who is a very accurate passer when he makes the right read and makes a good decision. His numbers against Bucknell were outstanding. He threw for over 400 yards in that week one win over Bucknell. And then he played a really good game against Maryland, other than one really bad interception that, you know, he probably shouldn't have thrown, and the linebacker made a really good play on it. So other than that, I thought he's played pretty well this season, except that Buffalo game where I think he just let the pressure get to him a little bit. Buffalo's front seven was very good, and they were pressuring him all day. And that's something a lot of teams haven't been able to do against Temple over the last calendar year, is get pressure on the quarterback. So I think right there is a key to a game. You know, if you want to beat Temple, you got to get pressure on Anthony Russo and force him to make those bad decisions.
Tell us a little bit about what Russo has in the way of help in terms of the ground game. That I know you have a tremendous running back, so tell us about him.
So Anthony Russo last year, towards the end of last year especially, you know, offensive coordinator Dave Patnode, who now is with Coach Collins at Georgia Tech, he started opening up the run game with Russo a little more. And, you know, Russo has shown a little bit of the ability to run, especially against UCF in that game that turned into a shootout down in Orlando. And then against Houston, he ran the ball a little bit in that game too. But, you know, so far this season, he really hasn't gotten that opportunity, which is unusual, because at Northern Illinois, Coach Rod Carey and offensive coordinator Mike Aremovich, they like to run their quarterbacks a lot. And they really haven't with Russo this year. And I don't know if that's because Russo was dealing with an injury throughout camp and they just haven't gotten around to running him because they don't feel confident in him staying healthy if they start to run him, or if it's just that's not the type of offense they want to run and they'd rather rely on the running backs, considering that, you know, coming into the season they had a big question mark at that position. But I think so far, you know, Ramon Davis has stepped up and really established himself as the primary back in this offense despite being a true freshman. And then you have Jagger Gardner, who's also a good complementary back to him, who's bigger. You know, he can bust off a big one too, especially with that veteran offensive line in front of them.
Okay, that's a nice segue. I was going to ask you to talk a little bit about the offensive line. I saw that they've just allowed 2 sacks thus far. And then, of course, you're averaging close to 180 yards per game on the ground. And that's we'll talk a little bit about how Mike Houston's trying to establish the same thing in Greenville.
Of course, yeah. So Temple's offensive line, coming into the season, you know, the interior three they're probably one of the more experienced groups in FBS. You know, they have two quote unquote single digit tough guys in that interior three, and center Matt Hennessy and guard Javon Fair. You know, those guys are the two most experienced. Then you have Vincent Cozy beside Hennessy, who's very good in his own right. But Hennessy's really the anchor to that offensive line. I believe I saw a stat that through 160-some snaps this season, he hasn't allowed a QB pressure. So that's pretty remarkable given, you know, some of the talent that Temple's faced, especially with 2 Power 5 opponents that they've already played. But the tackles were definitely the question marks coming into the season. Adam Klein last year started as a true freshman at the left tackle position, and, you know, he really stepped into that role and really didn't make a whole lot of mistakes. So he filled in very nicely, and I think he's only going to get better. I think he has the potential to be an NFL tackle. And then Isaac Moore on the other side, he saw a lot of playing time last year, but never really got the reps that the Klein did. But he's still learning the game. He's a student from Sweden. He came over. He was one of those international recruits that Collins was after, and, you know, he's played pretty well as well this season. So I think Temple's got, you know, a very good offensive line. They're very experienced, and aside from that, you know, I think they've done, like I said before, other than the Buffalo game, I thought they they've really shown that they can win the battle in the trenches, especially against good opposition.
Before we shift over to the defensive side of the ball, when we were talking about Russo, I meant to, of course, ask you about some of his top targets. And I know Blue and Jaden Blue, if I'm not mistaken, he's leading you in receptions. So, can you talk about him as well as some of the other top targets?
Yeah, of course. So, coming into the season, you know, Jaden Blue, I had talked about, I believe it was with the Cincinnati site, that I called that Jaden Blue was going to have a breakout year this year. And I said that because teams are going to scheme for your top two receivers. Temple's got two single-digit receivers in Brandon Mack and Isaiah Wright, and they are both the veterans of the group. Brandon Mack, again, NFL prospect, just needs to really work on being more consistent. He's a tall, big body guy, red zone target, and he had a good game against Buffalo, but he also needs, like I said, he just needs to be more consistent. Isaiah Wright, he's All-American kick returner, but he's also been more of the go-to guy since he is the senior of the bunch. He's more of those for short yardage situations. You know, he's the one that Russo looks for in crossing routes and slant routes, because once he has the ball in his hands, if he catches the ball, which he has improved his catching ability this year, he's a guy that's going to bust the big one. And but when teams have to scheme for top two, that typically leaves the third guy open. And Jaden Blue so far this season has been that third guy, because fellow senior Randall Jones has been hampered by a foot injury, and he hasn't played since the Bucknell game. So Blue's been more of the slot guy. He's open quite a bit, and he has the ability to get open, and he's done a heck of a job so far. He's very good at tracking the ball, and like I said, getting open and his route running. So he has 402 yards so far on the season, and he has two touchdowns, including a 79-yarder. So like I said, he also has the potential to bust a big one. And, you know, the remarkable thing about him is that he actually left the team in the middle of last season because he didn't feel like his heart was in it immediately. And he said, you know, he wasn't getting a whole lot of playing time. And I think the interesting thing about it was, is when he spoke to one of our fellow writers with Al's Daily, is that he made note that this coaching staff trusts him. And it wasn't because, you know, that he wasn't skilled enough to play, but the previous coaching staff, he made note of it specifically, that he just felt like they didn't trust him as much as this coaching staff does. So that's why he ultimately came back and rejoined the team. And now he's having a heck of a year, and he's on pace to do something that no other Temple receiver has ever done, and that's eclipse the 1,000-yard mark in a single season. So we're obviously looking forward to seeing if he can achieve that feat this season. He's got off to a good start, so we'll see if that can keep up.
Shifting over to the defensive side of the ball, that's what, and the Owls have been tremendous. You talked about them shutting down that Maryland attack that was flying so high at the time they came to the link. And then so I think you're allowing, 10 points a game in less than 300 yards?
Yeah, that's correct. You know, so aside from that Buffalo game, the defense has been lights out this season. You know, especially against Maryland, I think that's where it really showed up on the scoreboard, you know, the score sheet, that they had three goal line stands in that game. So, you know, that was huge in going towards that Owls victory, because it's very easily, you know, three times in the red zone inside the 10 at that Maryland could have scored, but the defense came through when it mattered most, and they stopped Maryland, and they ended up winning that game. And again, this week against Georgia Tech, they, even despite going against their former head coach and their former coaching staff, you know, they didn't let the emotions get to them, and they showed how Temple tough they are, and they shut them out, other than, like I said, that safety, but that wasn't their fault. So, of course, you know, like I'm sure we'll touch on, you know, Temple's got great linebackers. The secondary's pretty experienced, but, you know, the defensive front was the big question mark coming into the season. But so far, especially the interior, they have really done something special there, and I think they're really what's driving the defense right now and allowing the defense to be so good.
Right, and that's something we've talked a lot about it in this preview, Dave, Kyle, and I, and just as far as how worried we are about our offensive line is very much a work in progress blocking the Owls, defensive front.
Yeah, well, so far this season, I would say the guy that's really stood out is Ephine Maje, who's a sophomore. He was a Collins recruit. He only had two offers coming out of high school here in New Hampshire. And, you know, he ended up flipping from New Hampshire to commit to Temple. Collins brought him in right there close to signing day. And, you know, he got some playing time last year, but he really has shown that he's going to be the next great Temple defensive lineman. And Temple's had a handful of those the last couple of years, and they've put a decent amount of guys in the NFL, like Hassan Reddick, Michael Dogby, Julian Taylor, Jacob Martin, just to name a few. So, and the good thing is, you know, he's only a sophomore, so Temple has him for a couple more years, and he currently leads the team with sacks with 2.5, and he's just been a force inside. And, you know, coming into the season, his position was the question mark, because they already had an established defensive tackle with Dan Archibong. And, you know, Quincy Roche is a good pass rusher on the outside, but the other DE position kind of was a question mark too. But grad student Zach Mesday has really stepped up there well, and he really looks like he's an FBS caliber player, despite, you know, him being a former walk-on. So, like I said, the D-lines, they've really impressed me so far, and I think that they're going to give the Pirates offensive line some troubles, but that's not to say that the Pirates can't find their way around that.
At the next level, tell us about the backers.
Well, the backers, of course, they have they actually have four single-digit guys in the backers, so they're four deep there pretty handedly. The group's led by Sean Bradley, who's really the captain of the defense, and he's the guy that, you know, really likes to play that spy, the QB spy, and also he's going to be key in this game against ECU, especially with them liking to run their quarterback a lot. So look for Bradley to have a pivotal role in this game coming up on Thursday night. But other than that, they have Sam Franklin, Isaiah Graham Mobley, and Chappelle Russell, all very talented players. Franklin and Russell are the other two that start alongside Bradley, and then IGM gets in. He fills in for Franklin and Russell when, you know, they need a breather. So all of them are very good. Like I said, Bradley leads the team with tackles, and Franklin and Russell are both very good in coverage as well. So I think ECU is definitely going to have their hands full. But I think, like I said, Temple had some issues with Buffalo, a team that liked to run the ball. They didn't throw the ball a whole lot. And I think in large part that was due to Bradley getting ejected in the first half. He got ejected for a targeting call, which I won't go into too much.
Yeah.
I thought it was a little soft. I didn't think it was targeting. It looked like he just put his head into the chest of the quarterback and tapped him. But, you know, that's all up to ref discretion. So so other than that game, I think where the Temple defense lost their captain, I think that as long as, you know, they don't have a stupid penalty like that where it hampers the entire position group there, then I think they'll be fine.
Before we move on and talk about the special teams a bit, so one of the numbers defensively that jumped off the page was that's what the Owls have held their opponents to 11 out of 52 on third down conversions.
Yes, and that is something I wanted to talk about, was the improvement that they have seen this year from last year. Last year they were allowing teams to convert, I believe it was 42.1% on third down, and then they were allowing 57% on fourth down. So those numbers this year have dropped to 25% and 43%. So those are dramatic changes and flips in just, you know, getting off the field. And I think that's really what hurt Temple last year is their defense just couldn't get off the field, even though they had a solid season. That's credit to, you know, the linebackers, especially, you know, against Maryland, Bradley had two of those three goal line stand stops of Anthony McFarland, who's Maryland's running back, and he's no slouch at running back. He's going to be an NFL running back. So I think that just is a testament to not only, you know, this system that Temple has instilled of this hard-nosed grit defense that they like to play, but it's also a testament to new defensive coordinator Jeff Knowles, who I believe he has worked his way up the coaching rankings very quickly because he is that good, and I would be looking for him to be a head coach somewhere within the next couple of years, probably at the FBS level.
Moving over to the special teams, as far as special teams are concerned, I'll start with a guy that you've already mentioned. We were talking about the receivers, Isaiah Wright. In Coach Houston's weekly press conference, he had some tremendous remarks just talking about what a difference maker that young man is. So tell us about Wright and then also the rest of the special teams.
Yeah, so like I said earlier, you know, Isaiah Wright's the type of guy that once he has the ball in his hands, he has the ability to make a play. And I think Anthony Russo described it best that Isaiah Wright is lightning in a bottle. He's just waiting to, you know, to find that opening and just explode. But, you know, it's interesting that Temple this year under Carey has not really set up for many Isaiah Wright returns. He really hasn't gotten a chance, especially in punt returns. He hasn't really gotten a chance to return. They've really played it very conservatively with him. And I'm not sure why that is entirely. Part of it, I believe, is that they've just faced some really good punters. Bucknell's punter is all FCS, All-American. Maryland had some good punters, and as did Georgia Tech. Their punter was pretty decent, too. So I think that's partially why, but I also think they want to guarantee possessions and make sure, you know, there's not going to be any turnovers on punt returns or kickoffs. So I think they'd rather take the yardage and take their chances with the offense rather than that. But I think that's, I don't want to say hurting, but it's taking an element away from their game that they have an advantage at, because like you said, he was an All-American returner last year, and he's really, if he's going to find his way into the NFL, that's where it's going to be. But aside from Wright, Temple special teams has kind of been sloppy this year, to put it quite frank to you. That had been a really big strength of the Owls over the last couple of years and really over the last decade. And that was a lot in thanks to special teams coordinator Ed Foley, and who was the interim coach when Matt Rhule left and when Collins left for their bowl game. But Ed has since left the program. He is now with Matt Rhule at Baylor, and that was because Carey moved him to an off-the-field role, and I the fan base was very upset about that, and I would say that is the one thing that Carey has against him right now, is the fan base questions that move and moving Foley off the field, and eventually him leaving for Baylor is because he was moved off the field and he wanted to, you know, coach on the field. So, and I think you can't blame it entirely on the coaches for this move, because the players have to execute special teams just as much as the coaches have to coach it. But there's definitely been some judgment issues, I guess you could say, with the special teams department this year. Temple has two bad snaps on punts that cost them, that cost them against Maryland. They gave up a safety because the snapper snapped one out of the end zone. And against Buffalo, same thing. It was a low snap. Snap goes 40 yards back, and the punter has to fall on it, and it sets Buffalo up in the red zone. So, you know, those kind of mistakes they won't win you a game, but they're going to lose you a game. So, you know, that's something that's been an issue this year. And Temple really hasn't elected to take a lot of field goals. They've been very conservative on special teams, and I'm interested to see how they play it in conference play now, because you know, at times you're going to need to take the 3 points and you're going to need to rely on your special teams to really help you win games.
Right, and that's one of the things as far as red zone defense of the Pirates, and we know that's going to be critical on Thursday night, just forcing the Owls, doing our best to bend but not break, and that kind of thing. And then East Carolina did block a punt against Old Dominion, so considering the snap issues that you just referenced, that will be another area to keep eye on as well.
Yeah, and since the second bad snap against Buffalo, the Owls have had a change in long snapper, so they hopefully have resolved themselves. And you know, the punting itself hasn't been that great. I think going into that Buffalo game, Temple was dead last in net punting yardage, and that was in thanks to a pretty bad game against Maryland that our punter had, Adam Berry, who's a JUCO transfer who came in. He was a carry guy that he brought in to punt, and Temple's punter from last year transferred to Charlotte. So he's a new guy, and I don't know if it was just, you know, communication issues between the long snapper and the punter, just bad execution, or, you know, he just got in his own head and he was just hitting some bad punts. But that's definitely the biggest area that Temple needs to improve on going forward is the special teams.
Yep. And that's something, in addition to the special teams, that the three of us, and we really think, and we know the way our offense is playing right now, hopefully we'll find a way to force a turnover or two and get some short fields and those sorts of things. Because, and then when we have those opportunities, you know they're going to be pretty few, so you got to capitalize on them, because that's something that we've struggled at quite a bit this year as well.
Yeah, I totally agree, and that's the way I think you really have to play Temple, is that you have to force them into turning the ball over, and you have to finish drives, because if everything is clicking and Temple's defense just so happens to be backed up against its own goal line a couple times, you're going to find points on the board, as Buffalo found out. You know, they ran up that score in that game pretty quickly because Temple's defense was constantly on the field and they were backed up deep in their own territory a lot. So I think that's the formula to beat Temple. And if you can establish a running game and control the clock, I think you're in pretty good shape.
Ryan, you've been great. We really appreciate your time so much, breaking down the Owls. And that's what, obviously, Thursday will be here before you know it, as we're recording this on Monday night. So, again, we appreciate your time. We look forward to having you back during basketball season.
Of course. My pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much, Brian. Very much. I tell you what, that was a great interview, as always, and we appreciate his support of the podcast. He's come on every time we ask him, and definitely there's 24/7 guys. We have Igo and Ryan Wallen coming up huge for this Temple preview. By the way, guys, before we talk more Temple, I checked in today, and everything's good for the cruise. I talked to Dana. She'll be coming back on the podcast in a few weeks. She's going to Europe for a couple weeks, so she's going on a river cruise there in the Europe, and she'll be back in a couple weeks. But everything's good with Nassau. Everything's good to go for our cruise, and we'll give you the time when you call Dana, because she's, when you hear this podcast, she'll be out of the country. Yeah. But she'll be back in a couple weeks, and we'll have her on, and we're excited about the big cruise, the Sports Objective Pirate Cruise.
Yeah. Go ahead, Dave. No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, Kyle, that we want Bubba and you guys to come on. And Nassau, folks, Nassau is actually did not get hit at all. And so we want everybody to keep in mind July the 16th to the 20th, the Sports Objective Pirate Cruise, our first ever. And we're very excited about the response. And I know there were some people that, even close friends, that were hesitant about going because they thought all the Bahamas were decimated, but it's like 100 islands for the Bahamas, and Nassau, where we're going, was not hit at all.
You know, you mentioned Europe, and that Dana from Global Travels is in Europe right now, and it makes me think of a question.
Okay.
if you're American before you come in the bathroom and you're American when you leave the bathroom, what are you while you're in the bathroom?
You're a European.
You're European. European.
I remember that joke when I was like 8.
Yeah. Bobby, you ever been to Europe?
I have not.
You never been to Europe? Dave, I know you have. I think you visited Germany.
Yes,
and,
and Turkey.
Turkey.
Well, that's actually Southwest. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm about to say that's not
Southwest know, Asia. So yeah, Southwest
Turkey
Asia,
is really. Not Europe. Yeah. So now, what? Now, just out of curiosity, why the hell did you go to Turkey?
I went on a mission. I love to do mission trips, and I also went to Western Africa to Benin. But
okay. Well, that's good.
I love mission trips, and Turkey is an absolutely gorgeous country, to say the very least. It's the service. As far as people there, the people were amazing, and we'll talk another time about Turkey. I could go on and on about it. I don't want to get on that tangent, but a very great thing. Anyway,
maybe that'll be a good topic for November around Thanksgiving.
Sounds good to me.
Yes.
All right, so do you guys have anything as far as, let's talk Temple real quick. What do you have before we go?
It's going to be key for the offensive line to play well. Their front is really good. That's my biggest concern is their defensive front push around our O-line. I think we're going to have to make some plays downfield. I don't think we're going to be able to run it on them consistently. So we're going to need Holton to make some plays downfield. And I think to be able to run it, we may need to see Holton pull it down and run it some. Biggest keys, I think, for this game, if we are going to have a chance to win it, is we're going to have to play another great game on defense. Keep the game no more than I think we got to keep Temple to around 24 points,
right?
And need to make some plays with special teams again.
Bubba, what about you? And I take it you think that Temple Owls are going to win the game.
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll give our scores here in a minute. Bubba, what are your thoughts?
I'd say everything that you said is spot on. I mean, we got to make it a defensive ball game. The offense has to be opportunistic again. Has to find a way to give the defense some time off the field. And because this will obviously be the most potent offense we've seen, if not all year, certainly since NC State. So very interested to see how that goes. See how Russo and the Temple receivers and challenge our young secondary. And then hopefully we'll be able to make some more strides, at least do what we did last week against ODU. I mean, it's nothing to brag about, but it was a step in the right direction, and hopefully we can be right there at least around 100 yards or more to give our passing game more of a shot. And then maybe we can I'm interested to see if we implement some more screen passes and way to get the ball on the perimeter where the offensive line doesn't have to do everything.
Yeah.
Spread them out a little more. Eric Graham, and he was making that point. He and I were talking about it on Saturday. It'll be interesting to see how we approach things.
Yeah, that's a good point.
What do you think, guys? Let's do our predictions. I'll go first. I'm normally the optimist, and normally I'm surprised, folks. I really think this is going to be a competitive game. I think the Pirates are going to fall a little short, and I'm going to say the Pirates 27, and I'm going to go – I'm sorry, Temple 27, and I think East Carolina 21.
Yeah, I actually also have Temple at 27. Temple 27, East Carolina 13.
All right, and Bubba?
I will say let's go Temple 31, East Carolina 17.
All right, guys, we got the final thoughts and predictions. Good luck to the Pirates. I hope I'm wrong. I'm usually the guy that's the optimist, think we're going to win, but I think it's going to be competitive, a little bit short. So we'll see how it plays out. Of course, after the game, we'll do our playback. In the meantime, guys, appreciate you very much. Until next time, for Bubba Rosenbaum, Kyle from LaGrange Barber, I'm Dave Richmond for the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.